broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is Matt Sorensen here. I'm an attorney, best-selling author, podcast host. I mean, as you found out, here with my partner, Mark Kohler, attorney, CPA, surfer, scoutmaster, husband, father.
Whoop. Boy, man.
What else should we have? Best-selling author, heck of a good guy.
Gosh. Wow, you just made my day. All right, show's over.
Let's just end on that.
Yeah, let's just end on that note. End on a high note. I think, well, George Costanza did that in Seinfeld. Just walk out.
Just walk out. That's it for me. Well, this show, if you're new here to the show, this is about saving taxes, protecting your assets, living the American dream, building wealth. And today, we're going to be hitting one of those key concepts, how to protect your assets, how to use companies properly. I'm going to let Mark intro the show today, but want to let you know where you can find the show. Obviously, under the Refresh Your Wealth podcast on iTunes. We know that's where many of you find us, and we appreciate you listening. You can also check out the show at refreshyourwealth.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, get announcements about new shows, and also get tips and articles, tax deadlines, a lot of great information on applicable to business owners, entrepreneurs, real estate investors. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter. We've got a lot of resources and content going out there we think you'll find very, very valuable. So now, Mark, today, what do we got?
Yeah, this is it. This is so important. If you are a small business owner, ultimately you're going to end up setting up a company. You're going to set up an LLC, a corporation. And we have been tricked by the media, by those sexy LegalZoom commercials and Robert Shapiro and his beady little eyes, you know. I'm quoting, so I married an axe murderer with the colonel with his beady little eyes. Hey, Robert Shapiro, he's a good guy. I'm not trying to beat him up. He looks great. He looks fine. I hope I look as good as him, but it's, you know, it's camera work. It's makeup. But anyway, Robert Shapiro has simplified this company maintenance, company setup process down to one sheet of paper. Just go on the state, click, click, click. Set up my entity. I'm done. I'm good. I have an LLC. I have a corporation. Oh, my dear listeners, you've been lulled into a false sense of security, because that is not what's going to protect you in a lawsuit. It's not going to help you with the IRS. If you don't have your crap together, I said that politically correct, Matt. I hope you approve. if you don't have your stuff together, then that company is going to be worthless. And you're not doing yourself any favors by just setting up your LLC with one sheet of paper on the state, because you think that's all you have to do. So today, we're going to bust it down. We're going to talk about some procedures that will save you thousands and thousands of dollars of headache and concerns and problems, and talk about how you maintain it and keep it the cost down. There you go, Matt. That was the intro. You want to listen to the show now. I hope I sexed it up enough.
Yes, I'm very turned on by the show today. Well, this is something that every business owner, investor, I don't care what you're doing, if you're using business entities, this is really important to understand. And the problem is, as Mark said, there's a lot of misinformation from advertising, mainstream media, whatever scapegoat you want to call out here. OJ's lawyer, Robert Shapiro. But the important thing is, just getting a little bit of advice from an attorney on what to do. And that's what Mark and I are going to do. We just want to give you a little bit of advice and a heads up on what you really need to be doing, so that you get the asset protection you think you got when you set up your entity. Because after all, that's one of the primary reasons people set up corporations, LLCs, limited partnerships. One of the primary reasons is asset protection. But if you're not maintaining it properly, it's going to go out the door and it's going to be totally worthless. So we're going to make sure you keep that asset protection and give you some tips on how to get it done. Now, but before we get into the topic, we always love to throw out some quick and easy tips for you on the tax and legal side. And I've got a humdinger of a legal tip I'm pretty excited to give.
Man, I'm up for a humdinger. I don't know what a humdinger is, but if you've got a humdinger of a legal tip, I want to hear it. So let's do it.
It's been at least 10 shows since I've done a humdinger of a legal tip, so I figure it's due.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right, so what I want to talk about is when to get a personal guarantee. When do I want to get a personal guarantee?
Because you don't want to give them out. You just want to get
them. When do we get them? Exactly. Good point. So now here's the point, and this kind of relates to what we're talking about here on a couple of levels. If you're ever loaning money or leasing a property or contracting with any party that's going to owe you money, and the other person on the other end of the agreement is a company like an LLC or a corporation, and they're going to owe you money, like under a loan or a lease or some contract that you've entered into from a business or investment standpoint, you want a personal guarantee from the owner of that business that says, hey, if the company fails to perform on this, you personally, as the owner of the business, it's your responsibility to perform. Now, why do we want this? Because a lot of businesses can fail. And what the owner of that company is going to do is say, sorry, come after my company that's worthless. And you're not going to be able to collect on the money that company owes you. Or you're not going to be able to collect on that lease agreement that company owes you. And so you want an individual person to go after to pursue that debt. And let me just give you a quick example. This is a client I had who bought a commercial building. It had existing tenants in it. It was a nice commercial building in Park City, Utah. And what he did was, his largest tenant in the building, once he bought it, the very first month, failed to pay rent. Now, this was a pretty sophisticated real estate investor client. He's owned a lot of real estate in the past. And he did his due diligence. This tenant never missed a payment, was never even late on rent. First day, this guy takes over ownership of the building. The largest tenant fails to pay. Now, I think what was happening here is this tenant thought, hey, this company's not really going too well. I don't know if this guy knows about the terms of my lease very well, this new owner, so I'm going to default and see what happens. Well, my client, luckily, did this due diligence. He did have personal guarantees that got assigned to him when he bought the property. So we quickly sent a letter to the tenant, and this is, you know, thousands of dollars in unpaid rent, and said, hey, John, you own XYZ company. You signed a personal guarantee. XYZ company didn't send its rent in. You now owe it. Well, you know what? XYZ company sent in its rent payment and never defaulted again. Because this guy probably thought, hey, maybe they don't know about this personal guarantee, or maybe they never got it when they bought it. But once we, you know, pulled that out, rent payments came back in, and the lease came back into compliance. So it saves a lot of people. It's really important to get, when you're on the other end here and you're contracting with someone else who's a company that's going to owe you money or have an obligation to pay you, check out and get a personal guarantee on the owner of that business. That's my legal tip. Was that a humdinger, Mark?
Matt, that was a humdinger. And that, ironically, that will. And I say this, we've said it before, and I'll say it again. This show can change lives. And when you're facing a significant loss because someone's not paying you, but because you listened to the show and Matt's humdinger tip, you got a personal guarantee from this bozo that owes you money, all of a sudden, you're saved, hopefully, because this person now has an increased chance of paying you because of that personal liability they could face. So take it to heart. It could change your life, save your family, save your retirement account. And a lot of people think when they're loaning money out of an IRA, they don't have to take this as serious either because, oh, it's my IRA doing business. It's one step removed. Oh, no, no, no. If you're going to loan money out of an IRA to someone, you want to make sure they have a personal guarantee attached to pay your IRA back as well. Mm-hmm. There you go. That's my IRA guru, Matt Sorensen. I'm just throwing that down just a little bit, you know.
You know I love that. You know it. You know it.
I love you. Well, you know, it was funny last night. Matt was texting me and he was asking me about, you know, what are we going to talk about in this meeting coming up the next week? And I said, oh, I want to talk about offshore betting in the Himalayas. It's a small story. You're probably not following it, but it's a good one. And anybody out there that is any, you know, Fletch fan, Fletch connoisseur knows that, that's a classic quote from Fletch. And Matt's like, what are you talking about? Offshore betting in the Himalayas? And I go, Matt, you're hurt my feelings. That's Fletch, top to bottom.
Yeah, I once every 3 months, I don't laugh at one of Mark's jokes, and it's always a Fletch quote.
Yeah.
I've seen like Fletch, but there, I think, is this like from the real Fletch, or is this like Fletch goes to, you know, New York or whatever? Monica. I don't even know. Like, how many Fletches are there?
There's only two. Gosh, look at you hurt my feelings again.
Oh, dude, my Fletch knowledge is not very good, clearly.
Well, but the funny part of this whole story was Matt texts me back and he goes, I don't think I get many of your jokes sometimes. And I said, that happens to a lot of people. So yeah, it's funny.
I'm president of that fan club, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Now, before we also actually have some amazing guests that are going to be joining us for our show. So quickly, we've got to get into our tax tip.
Tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, so here's the tax tip, and this is hot off the wire with some IRS notices that have been coming out this month. This is typical, I hate to say, but it's always a good reminder that there are a lot of white collar criminals out there. You know, gone are the good days of walking out of a movie theater and someone just holding you up with a switchblade on the side of the street, wearing a leather jacket and a white t-shirt. You know, that those days are over. It's now someone trying to steal from you through a unique plan with the web. You know, sending you some sort of email, making some sort of phone call. We have to be more guarded than ever before. And this is so true when it comes to the IRS. A lot of people will disguise themselves as IRS representatives and make phone calls. We've talked about that on the show before. You never assume that anybody will ever call you from the IRS. They do not. They send letters. They also will not send emails. And this is another phishing scam, not like going ice fishing, which I sometimes do now that I live in the cold north of Idaho. But this
I
is
get
a
that
fishing...
one. That one was funny. That was funny.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, good. See, you know, I'll work on that. So, but we're talking about phishing as in PH. P as in Peter, H as in Hilo, phishing scam. And what this is someone that's trying to get you and lure you. See, there's some phishing, F-I-S-H-I-N-G analogies here. But these thieves attempt to lure you into a scam, maybe mainly through impersonations. And the scam may claim to be from a friend, a company, or whom you've done business. They claim a prize or reward. And of course, the big one is cyber criminals are saying they're from the IRS. You may own money. They may be a government agency with a fake government seal. And we're going to be talking about that later in the show, too, when it comes to company maintenance. You'd be shocked. But I just want to caution you to keep in mind the IRS will not send an email. And what the IRS has also done, and I thought this was very kind and helpful of them, if you can think of the IRS as kind and helpful, is they said that there's a lot of this identity theft going on that has nothing to do with the IRS, but they're just warning us as consumers. And I thought that was helpful. And here's the biggest tip. And when we have new employees at our office, we always have to remind them about this. Never open a link in an email that you don't specifically know that it's there for you, that it was meant to come, that you're expecting it. So many people think, oh, this looks like a fun link. Oh my gosh, do not hit those links. They can immediately get into your computer, hit it with cookies, a virus, and all of a sudden you just email blasted 32,000 people from your email database. Who knows? Be very, very careful. So the IRS is warning about emails that contain links, emails that contain attachments. It's an off email from a friend that you're like, oh, this is an old friend I haven't heard from. Well, he probably got hacked and now they're hitting his database of contacts. If they ask you to use special passwords or something. It can be unique. So watch out. Make sure that you've got a browser that has some sort of security features. And so it's you know, kind of a pseudo tax tip because it's IRS based as well. But watch out, people.
Watch out. Watch out. I love that little phishing joke. Good job. And luring and the pH and you used
baiting you in?
Hilo, baiting you in when you referred to H, Hilo. Jeez. Man.
Well, it's those are little things that matter, man. I'm here, you know, it's
details.
A little thing.
It's the details.
It is.
All right. Well, I love the topic we're going to talk about today. And I hope a lot of you find this valuable because it's something that is missing out there. I think a lot of people in the legal zooms of the world or, you know, click online and set up your entity, miss this step. They only care about selling you the entity to start with, and they don't care where the heck you go after it because they're not making money. So they don't tell you everything else. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to peel the curtain back, so to speak, and let you know what you need to know to actually keep that liability protection for your entity. And Mark, we've got some special guests, some of the key paralegals in our office who are going to give you some of the details, because why not have some of the smartest people in our office come on and share their knowledge?
Well, and you know, I'd like to introduce our guests, if I may, because this is very important. We are strategists. We work with clients on their big picture, tying it all together. And in the trenches every day are some amazing people that make this happen. And that's our paralegals. And so they came kicking and screaming. They're not excited to come on our radio show, Matt. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. These are paralegals. If we were doing, you know, video or something, it'd even be worse. You know, you ladies are much more self-conscious about these sorts of things. But Matt and I, we'll do whatever. But
wait, we don't care.
No. So we've got Susan Kumpy joining us, our paralegal and director over company setup and operations for new entity setups around the country. And Becky Lloyd, our company maintenance director, helping clients maintain their entities. And both of these ladies, guys, know so much more than Matt and myself when it comes to the details. You know, what are those little things that will shock you about state registration processes, the costs, and all those sorts of things?
Yeah.
So without further ado, let's get these ladies out here on the show. All right. Well, Susan, let's bring you out first, if we could. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. I'm glad to be here.
I somehow don't believe you. She even said when we said, can you come on the show and talk about all these interesting things you encounter? And she's like, do I have to?
You mean like, because it's my job or like because I want to?
Yeah. You know, how many thousands of people would love to come on the Refresh Your Wealth show? I mean, we have people knocking down the door to come on our show and be with us. I mean, mm-hmm. This is a big deal, but not Susan. She holds her cards.
I want to give some context to people too. Okay. We set up over 1,000 entities in our firm a year, and we've been setting up, I mean, probably Susan's probably been involved as we set up tens of thousands of entities over the years. And so there's a lot of stuff that she's seen. So you want to talk to someone that's been in the trenches that knows their stuff on this stuff. That's why we got Susan. And then Becky, who's going to come on later. I mean, she's managing, I mean, over 3,000 companies on their annual maintenance. So they got the knowledge, they got the skills, and now we're going to just fire away with questions. So be ready,
yeah,
Susan.
Yeah. Okay, now, Susan, let's set the stage here. Now, for all of our listeners here that may have an LLC or a corporation, I want to remind you, it's not just one piece of paper. There should be a package that's included. You should be getting pieces and parts, whether it's an LLC or a corporation. So, Susan, let me ask you, what would be the differences? Like, what would a package look like for an LLC versus a corporation? And some people may be going, well, I never got that. So maybe tell us briefly about what people should be looking for when they get one of these entities.
All right. Well, we'll start off with the LLC. Your LLC has got to be registered with the state. Typically, it's articles of organization, certificate of formation. A lot of times in particular states, so I'll give you California as an example, they have supplemental filings that go along after you file your articles with the state. California has a statement of information. If that doesn't get filed within 90 days, every state has a different time frame, but if those supplementals don't get filed, your entity can go into default status and you'll be sitting there with an entity that's not valid. So that's one of the things to start off with. The second thing is you want to make sure you have your tax ID number and that your tax status is correct with the IRS. There's a couple of options. There's single member LLC, there's partnerships that go along with the LLC. There's going to be an operating agreement, which is the basic bones of your company, gives you the ins and outs of the company. You got to make sure you have organizational minutes, annual minutes, some of those things. Those are very vital to go along with it. The end result that we do for you is we give you a corporate book. And for an LLC, it's going to have all your documents. It's going to have your membership certificates. It's going to have a corporate seal that comes with it. Now, with your corporation, it's...
Hey, can I just interject? Susan, that was amazing. Now, I want you to know this was unscripted, live. This is powerful. I didn't know what Susan was going to say. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you were so good. Okay. So now that what's common before you say corp, what again, and we alluded to this earlier in the show, is a lot of people think, well, I filed that one sheet of paper, and maybe I even went to the state website myself rather than even going to LegalZoom, and they think it's done deal, done. And again, that's not the case when it comes to a lawsuit. You want to make sure that you have that all together. What is shocking for people, before we go to corporations maybe and what are there, Susan, what are people oftentimes when they show up and do the cleanup service? We literally have a service called fixmylegalzoomentity.com, but what do people usually show up with, and what are the questions they ask?
Typically what I see come through is just your basic filing with the state that they've probably went online and filed. Sometimes they'll have an EIN number, tax ID number. Sometimes they won't, but those are the two typical things that come through. People think that they have, you know, what's needed. And a lot of times the structure of the companies aren't correct. They've set them up as manager or member managed. So it exposes the member of the company to public view. So we always want to make sure we change that. And I think that's some of the most shocking that people don't realize that they're doing when they set it up, is they're subjecting themselves to the public view and telling the public that, hey, I'm the member of this company, I'm the owner, so if you want to come after me, here you go, here I am.
Mm-hmm. Susan, now you mentioned California like has some supplemental filings, and I think a lot of states have that. I'm in Arizona, you know, when you set up the Arizona entity, you may get approved with the state, and you have a piece of paper that says you're an Arizona LLC for, you know, but you've got to still do something else, right? And so, right. Like, what do you got to do in Arizona? Just as an example, this is every state can have some nuance here. So,
right. So, Arizona, you have to publish the articles in a newspaper in the county where the company is located. So, that's one of the things. Like, Arizona has that requirement. New York has that requirement for an LLC. New York actually makes you publicate in two different newspapers. And they specify the newspapers. So you have to, one, know which newspapers they want you to file in. You can't just go and pick one yourself. Mm-hmm. Washington has supplemental filings, initial lists that have to be filed after you get the company established. Georgia has some of the same rules. Those are just some of the ones off the top of the head that have those supplementals. So you really do need to know what you're doing when you're setting these up.
Well, on this note, I think that a lot of people feel like, what's the big deal, Mark? Why do I have to worry about all this? Now, let me just give a quick example. For those of you that have been in a workshop of mine, I want to highlight the fact that I do not go to court. I'm a lover, not a fighter. And there's some, you know, urban legends and stories about me having to go to court on occasion. If you've ever seen the movie My Cousin Vinny, there you go. That's me in a court. Now, I can tear it up in a boardroom, but the courtroom is going to be challenging. But the experiences I've had in the courtroom have been around this asset protection thing, and been more of a support in my latter years of helping people defend the corporate veil or pierce it. And so that's what it comes down to. When you hear about piercing the corporate veil, if you want to go after someone that ran over your kid or their rental property sucks and they've got black mold or asbestos or there's some sort of crisis and you want to sue someone and they say they have an LLC or corporation and they're going to hide behind it, that's called hiding behind the veil. Well, your veil has to be substantiated. It's got to be protected. And so if you don't have all these pieces and parts for an LLC, it's very easy for an attorney to go, well, show me your LLC, show me your operating room, show me your minutes, show me all this stuff. And if it's been collecting dust and there's no record of any sort of initial setup that was proper, they're going to be able to get a personal judgment against you personally. And you may go, what? I set up this entity in the first place. I shouldn't be personally liable. Well, you didn't set it up the right way. And so please spend the extra few dollars it takes to get the right entity. And it's surprising, I know, how many people come to you, Susan, that have an entity that's already defunct, and they just did it 3 months ago. And they're like, what happened? So regrettably, you can go to Home Depot and buy maybe a few simple things to fix your sink. But if you've got a big leak, call a plumber. Do it right.
Yeah. And do you want the foundation of your business and your investments? I think a lot of people set up an entity or, you know, for their new company or a new business venture or a new investment property. And but do you want the foundation of that to be something you just cranked out online yourself, and you know you had a million questions, but you wanted to play lawyer, you know, you wanted to be Joe Pesci representing the Karate Kid in My Cousin Vinny. So you went for it. But you got this doubt in your mind. You're like, God, did I do it right? I don't know. And Susan, here's one thing I think a lot of people miss. Some people may get the articles, they may get a tax ID, they may have got the right tax classification, but they miss the operating agreement. And I want everybody to know the operating agreement's important. A lot of people think, well, it's just me or me and my spouse. I don't need an operating agreement. Oh, really? Because most company statutes in the states are going to say the operating agreement is where it lays out the liability of the members or the liability of the manager of the company. And so in our operating agreement, of course, we're going to say members are not responsible for liabilities of the company. Neither is the manager. Well, if you didn't say that in your operating agreement, are you going to be protected? We don't know. It's an unanswered question. You have to state that in your operating agreement, how liabilities are handled. So that's just one example, which is one of the key reasons people are setting this up of using an operating agreement. But Susan, the question I had is, what's your number one piece of advice for someone who's set up their company on their own, or maybe the number one error you see, someone who set it up on their own and they come to you, they bring you your little documents they have. What's the number one problems you're finding?
Honestly, yeah, I would have to tell you the number one thing that I see is that structure of how they've established it with the state and the privacy issues, things like that. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I come across. The other thing is with corporations, you know, people go and they file and they think they're all good and they don't realize that they don't have the S-corp status. And so now they're going to be subject to and be taxed as a C-corp versus an S-corp. You know, so those are the two probably biggest things that I see that we help clients and fix for them.
All right. Now, before we move on, I cut you off at the beginning. For those that were taking notes, what were the parts of a corporation? Not just an LLC, but if you could go back into the recesses of your mind again and tell us what should be included in a corporation's package.
All right. The basics, you start off with the articles of incorporation with the state. That's what gets filed. You obviously obtain the tax ID number. From there, if you don't want to be taxed as a C corp, then you're going to want to file the supplemental filing with the IRS that elects you to be taxed as an S corporation. That's one of the things. You also get your bylaws, which is similar to the operating agreement. It's the bones of the company. It explains how you run it, what you need to do. You're going to need your minutes, your annual minutes, your organizational minutes. You're going to have a stock letter that actually issues the stock of the corporation to the actual person so they actually have ownership of the company. You're also going to get that corporate book that comes with it, and then you're going to get your stock certificates that issue you the stock in the company, as well as your corporate seal. And a couple of things to note, in a corporation, a lot of those have the same supplemental state filings with the different states, but there are a few states such as New Jersey and New York that don't recognize your tax status. So if you don't file that supplemental S-corp tax status with those two states, you're going to be subject to a C-corp status with those states. Even though you filed with the IRS, they're still going to tell you, no, you didn't file this form, so we're going to tax you as a C-corp.
Well, I think this is a great little segue into this point, because we put this in the title of the show, is that a lot of people think, well, okay, Mark, I got to maintain my entity or set it up properly for a lawsuit, but this goes hand in hand with an IRS situation. In many, many audits that we've ever helped a new client with or something, the IRS is asking for the corporate book, the stock certificates, the operating agreement, the minutes, because the way your LLC is taxed, the way your S corporation or C corporation is taxed, is plays out with those initial formation documents. So the IRS is very privy to what things should look like too. And if you show up with one piece of paper, they smell blood in the water. I was working late last night watching Jaws, and I'll just tell you, sharks can smell blood in the water. They really can, miles away. So when you show up with your crap disorganized, IRS agents below the table are just rubbing their hands together. Ugh, I've got a fresh one here. So this helps you with the IRS too, and with your accounting firms that you work with. They need to know what things look like. So very, very important.
All right. Well, let's talk about maybe maintaining the company. And we're going to have Becky Lloyd. She's the paralegal who manages the company maintenance program, which is what we call in our office. But I want to give just a couple of tips here in operating your company before we bring Becky on in terms of your annual maintenance. So one thing to keep in mind is once you set up the entity, you need to use the entity. Okay. All right. So you need to go set up a separate bank account for the company. Don't use that bank account to pay personal expenses. Keep that bank account separate. It should receive the business income, pay the business expenses, and when there's profit or there's salary or wages you want to pay yourself, then you pay yourself from the company account to you personally. And so it's really important that you have a separate bank account because you need to show, if you're in a lawsuit, the court, that this is an issue. Did you treat this company separate from you personally? There's something called an alter ego theory that says if you just treat the company like it's you personally, then the courts are going to treat the company like it was you personally, and you're personally going to be liable. So we need to operate it separately. Step one, separate bank account. Now, the other reason a bank account's nice is it's easier to track your income and expense. You don't want to be digging through your personal bank accounts to remember what the heck you spent on the business and was this personal or business. Separate bank account keeps it clear for you. Next thing, when you're contracting or actually doing business, use the company name on contracts and invoices and your documents, whether it's leases or whatever it may be. Use the company name. Don't use your personal name. You may be signing on behalf of the company, but make sure the company name is in all of your documents, contracts, and agreements as you go out and conduct business. So I just want to set that out there. I'm sorry that was a little of a tirade there, but I just want to set that out there. It had to be said.
Yeah. And I just want to add to this too, before we get the amazing Becky Lloyd on the line here, is the LLC with a rental property is a classic example. If you have an LLC and you have a rental, the tenant should pay the rent to the LLC bank account. The LLC should be on title. Mm-hmm. We have a paralegal at our office that will just help you get your rental properties transferred to your LLC. Misty Pasco, give her a call. And then you also need to make sure the LLC is on the lease agreement. See, you tie the whole thing together with a little bow around it that shows that the LLC is doing business and not you. And that's where that LLC comes together. Now, Becky Lloyd, are you with us?
I am.
Woo!
Smiles and all.
Yeah, a little shout out for the Becky Lloyd of our office. She is awesome, folks. And this, where Becky comes into play, just on a practical note, is if you have a company and you're like, it's kind of a mess. I've never done minutes. And even though I have an LLC, do I really have to do that? And how do I get started? And a lot of people call Becky. And Becky, tell us about maybe those phone calls and what you try to help people accomplish.
You bet. Company maintenance is an umbrella of different types of services. And first of all, when you have an entity, I loved Matt's comment about use it. And one of the things that we need to do when we use the entity is that we need to maintain it. We need to maintain it in a couple of ways. One of the ways is to renew it with the Secretary of State if your state needs that. Another thing is to make sure that your taxes are in order, your franchise taxes, and that you have annual minutes that are documenting the things that your entity does throughout the year. So we also offer the registered agent service and the mail forward service, and it all bundles together. So we get a lot of the calls that can surface from renewing to, my entity has been in default. What do I do to get it back and reinstated?
Wait, did you just say minutes in an LLC? Because I was at a Holiday Inn, and Robert Shapiro was there, and he said I don't have to do minutes for an LLC. Or maybe it was Robert, I don't know, maybe it wasn't Shapiro. Yep. But so, but do I need to do minutes for an LLC? I mean, I don't file those, right? Why do I have to do minutes?
You don't file LLCs with the state. However, as Mark and yourself included have always preached that we need to document what our entities are doing, and that is a safety net to protect ourselves. And so we request that minutes are performed for LLCs along with the corporations. And
I love it.
And what are you putting in those minutes? So give me some examples. I want to do minutes on my company. I haven't been doing them. Okay, you're going to tell me why they're necessary. But what are you actually putting in the minutes? What goes in minutes?
Minutes can range due to the client and their needs. We can do a standard set of minutes, which just documents the name and who the members and managers are. And we like it when you actually put us to work, and we'll document everything that has gone on with your minutes. So we can record the profit and loss. We can record what has been done with your entity, such as if you have rentals and the maintenance that has been performed on those rentals. We can put anything and everything in the minutes to document what you've done.
Now, I thought there was some major irony here that no one really noticed, because you don't know Becky. In a prior life, Becky was a travel agent. Now, this is really cool. Before Orbitz and Travelocity and hotels.com, there was this thing called travel agents. I know it sounds crazy to some of you. You've never heard of this before. But you'd call a person to help plan your travel. It's pretty novel. Anyway, Becky, that right? Am I right? Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Back in the good old day. Well, here's the beauty of doing minutes. This is an incredible tax write-off opportunity. And so not only is Becky doing your minutes, she's helping you to deduct your travel. See the tie? Huh? So, you know, she is helping you save money on your travel by making sure that you have your minutes next time you travel with your board of advisors, your board of directors. Even if you have an LLC, take your loved ones, those people that believe in you and are helping you succeed. And we've talked about this on the show before. Being an entrepreneur can be lonely, and you want to build a team around you to help give you advice and give you motivation and structure. Those are the type of people that should be involved in your minutes, and they should be involved in your business travel. And they, you know, so next time you want to plan a big juggernaut down to, you know, Vegas, call your travel agent and call Becky. She will hook you up. She'll give you a questionnaire, tell you what to cover, where to go eat. And what else? What other travel advice would you give Becky? I mean,
that's right. We are a full service. And it does happen that our department, the company maintenance department, and I've got three others that work with me that are just as knowledgeable, that we're able to, once they've set up the entities with Susan and the documents are all together, that company maintenance, we really do, from year to year, assist you with any type of need and any type of communication and so forth that you need us to help you with.
Now, let me just state, I want to just add a couple ideas for people as they're thinking about what to put in their minutes. I think some people put too much crap in their minutes, and I think some people don't put enough. But here's what I like to do. We've kind of talked about the rental property. That's kind of an easy one here. Is what include new properties you acquired for the year, any new debt or any refinancing you may have done on a property, major improvements. I got LLCs with rentals in them. I'm not going to throw in the minutes that we, like, you know, I hired a handyman to go fix the toilet, you know. But if I did a remodel on the kitchen, I'm going to throw that in there. That's a major improvement. I want to record that for my company. It's a major company activity. Any new leases that may have been signed, who the tenants are. Did I change the business address? You know, these are just some things to think about to add in there. But I think there's a balance of including some important major items, but not overdoing it and putting in, you know, kind of some crazy stuff. But just think about major things that happen in your business. If someone asked you what happened in your business in 2016, what would you say? And that's the stuff you should be putting in your minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I want to give two quick examples here. I had two different experiences with Susan and Becky in the last 48 hours. The first one was Susan. If you remember, and I won't say the client's name, they were upset that during the setup of their entity, their address was all jacked up. They're like, what? How come my home address is out there in the public world, right? I mean,
yep.
What do you tell people about address?
It's all about privacy, to be honest with you. And if you don't want somebody searching you out and figuring out where you live, then it's probably a good idea to be on our mail forward service, use our registered agent service, you know, obtain a PO box, Those are some of the things that is useful when you're registering a company and trying to keep everything private. You know, keep personal information out of the public view as much as possible.
Yeah, and what was interesting is the client had used a paralegal type service that didn't involve a consultation, and they were upset and shocked that their personal address ended out there in public. But through a consultation, we can help advise you on privacy issues. And then Becky, just this morning, I don't know if you've seen your inbox yet on this yet, but I had an email from a client this morning that said, I just got a letter from the state of, you know, XYZ, and our company has been dissolved. What the heck happened? What do I do? And so I was like, Becky, help her out. And so Becky, and for those listeners out there that you may have not remembered paying a filing fee to a state recently, and you're like, oh my gosh, is my state in good standing? What do you do when you kind of do an analysis of a new client to determine if they're in good standing? And I want to ask this as the follow-up. How often can you reinstate a company? Is it possible within 3 or 6 months, or after that, you forget it, you're going to have to reset up your entity? So first, what do you do to analyze the situation? Do you get on the website state for the client? Or, I don't know. And then what do you do if they're a defunct?
Okay, good questions. Thank you. Yes, when a client comes in and they're not a current client, what we do is everybody is in an individual basis. And so we have the basic knowledge that we need to know what the state is about, where their fees are. But when a client calls in and there is trouble, or they have noticed that their entity has dissolved, and remember this too, that each state has different terminology that they use. And so sometimes it can be dissolved, sometimes it can be terminated, sometimes it can be expired. A good note is that 99% of the time it can all be fixed. And so not to panic, but that we communicate with the state personally. We call, we see if there's fees that have been involved. Sometimes your entity can be put into a default status, and it has to do with taxes. It doesn't even have to do with the Secretary of State. So don't confuse your renewals that need to be done on most states versus a tax issue, a franchise tax fee that maybe had not been paid yet, or your other taxes. And so we do take one-on-one basis, and we communicate with the state, and then we go from there. To answer your other question, Mark, how, you know, is it possible to reinstate entities once they have gone in a default status? Yes. It is easier to reinstate an LLC than it is for a corporation. Most of the time, most states do require a tax clearance letter from them in order to reinstate them. But the majority of the time, it's a very easy process, and it can be fixed with a fee. And most fees are very reasonable as well.
Wow, you're making it sound so rosy and easy, Becky.
It's not just rosy that you don't want people to panic, and it because you can fix. And unless they've gone beyond 5 to 10 years, most of the time it can be fixed.
Yeah. Now here's the concern, and why we want people to stay on the ball on this and up to date, is if you're in this administratively dissolved situation where you haven't been doing your stuff on an annual basis, you haven't been keeping the company up to date, you have a lawsuit against you. Guess what? Guess who's on the hook? The owner or owners of that business, okay? You don't get the limited liability protection of a corporation or an LLC. So the owners can be on the hook. So that's why it's really key to keep it in good standing at all times, and have someone that's just, if it's not you or an employee or someone, get someone on your team, which could be Becky or our office, to help you with that company maintenance. But let me ask this too, in terms of company maintenance here, and we can kind of give some final thoughts here, each of us, but I just want to ask on company maintenance, does it matter for the IRS? Like, does the IRS sometimes want my minutes? Does that ever come up?
Well, Matt, let me interject. That's a great question. And in fact, it's very, very important that your minutes reference important tax elections. The CPAs on our accounting side are bugging me and Becky more and more often, saying, hey, when you do those minutes, did you make a special election for the home office deduction? Did you make an election for health insurance premium deductions or a health reimbursement arrangement? What are you doing for an accountable plan for reimbursing auto miles? And so when you get into an audit, the IRS wants to see that you've adopted certain provisions, and the minutes is a great place to put those. So I know, Becky, you send out a whole questionnaire that has these types of questions, right?
Correct. We do.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it helps.
Even the IRS, I mean, the one of the audit questions for examiners, IRS agents, when they have a company audit, is to ask for the company minutes. All right. And this is with an LLC or a corporation. That's on their list of things to ask you. And you won't, you don't want to be answering, well, I don't have to file it to the state anywhere, so I don't have to prepare it. Nah, that's on the list. Sorry. You're going to need to provide those. So, so it is important, even just for IRS purposes, they do want to make sure that you're treating this company as a business and recording these important items on your annual minutes.
And I want to say thank you to Susan and Becky for coming out on the show. It's you guys are amazing. And I want to throw out two final points, is that this is not meant to be an infomercial. This is we do have a CMP special this month. And for anybody setting up a new entity or something, give us a shout out. You can go to the website, call Becky and all that. We do it once a year in January to February to kind of help people get their business and organized. A lot of times it's a New Year's resolution for a lot of people to finally get their minutes up to date. So that's why we do it this time of year. But really, I think there's been a lot of great content shared here that anybody with any entity, these are little tips that you should be aware of. A lot of this you can do yourself. We get that. And that's really cool. Our service is so affordable because we know it's not rocket science per se, but what it is consistency and discipline. And if you don't have consistency and discipline, that's what Susan and Becky do. They hold you together. So important. Any final tips? I mean, first, Susan, any little words of wisdom? Go team.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just like to say that if you're ever in question about whether your entity is set up correctly or not, email me, call me. You know, it doesn't cost you anything to send me over what you've got to take a look at it. You know, we can always look at it and then give you some advice or direct you in the direction of an attorney if it's something, you know, bigger than what paralegals can handle. But we definitely want to just make sure that your entity is up to speed, up to par, covering you like it's supposed to. So again, you know, if you're ever in question, shoot me an email or give me a call and we can look you over and see what we got for you. We're definitely not going to, you know, overprice you or tell you something that you don't need just to try to take your money. So we want to make sure we've got you covered.
Oh, good point. Becky, anything?
I agree. From what Susan said, company maintenance is vital. Take advantage of the investments that you've made in creating these entities and help us to, let me help you to maintain it so that you are happy with your business decisions.
All right. Well, I just want to tie this back together. Remember, a lot of the benefits you get from having an entity revolve around limited liability protection. And we just want to do this show to make sure you understand the importance of maintaining the corporate veil so that it's there when you need it, okay? There's lots of cases. We've had clients in this situation that haven't had companies maintained or they're in litigation and they're asking, hey, where's your company minutes? Oh, no, this is an LLC. Oh, yeah, where's your company minutes? We want to make sure you treated this as a separate company. So this happens when you're involved in a lawsuit. This stuff is vitally important. It's not just making sure you're updated with the state. It's not just about paying your taxes. It's about maintaining the company, keeping it separate. So reach out to us if we can be a resource to you on that. We've got other articles on our website about it, blog articles on company maintenance and maintaining your entity to get corporate veil protection. So Mark, just heck of a good time.
Yeah.
Humdinger of a show.
Yeah, it was awesome. Humdinger of a show. And I again, thank you to Susan Company and Becky Lloyd. We love you guys. And I want to say thanks to them. And also, I got a note passed to me during the show. I've got to give a disclaimer. We want to be respectful of the LegalZooms of the world. We joke about them and we beat them up a little bit. And it's not that LegalZoom's bad. It's that a lot of people go there and they don't check all the right boxes. They don't know what boxes to check. And for more of our sophisticated clients, we get it. An online service could be a good fit for them. Now, we have a discounted online type service that's just the same price, but a lot of people don't know that. And so, you know, just want to cover our bases there. I don't need the legal counsel of LegalZoom coming out saying I'm disparaging them. They do a great job, but it's the folks that don't know, again, what to ask for. And that's why our amazing team of paralegals and attorneys can help you there. So Thanks everybody for listening. Another fantastic show. Matt, take us out. Any final words?
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Keep in mind, you can always give us a 5-star review on iTunes under the Refresh Your Wealth show. We incentivize you and give you a free copy of either one of mine or Mark's books. And check out refreshyourwealth.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter to get announcements of new shows. And check out prior shows, get more information about us and our firm as well. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.